My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Every other Monday, we're coming at you with news, show reviews, and previews of upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're just getting into the scene or you've seen it all, this is the show for you.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network and wherever you get your audio.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go.
So far,
fast to freedom,
down,
stars tonight together.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for September 16th, 2025. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or on our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You could follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. Click the red box that says sponsor this podcast and accept a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts, it's your old pal Mike Spears, alongside your other host, Case Lowe. And Case, I feel like that both of us are at this stage of 2025 where this is supposed to be one of the biggest weekends of the wrestling year coming up with Anniversario, All Out, Wrestlepalooza, but the two of us, we're at the state here where we're just emotionally preparing ourselves for Gate of Meone, correct?
Oh, yes. No, all the stars will be out at Gate of Meone. You know, am I am I curious to see how this show plays out a week from today? I absolutely am. You know, I'm quite excited for Flamita and Kame versus Tanaka and Luis Monte. I am quite excited for the Yuma Anzai appearance with Hamare in that tag match. And I am quite excited that I will not have to do a written review and put words on paper for the Danshoku Dino match with cross-dressing Don Fuji. And I believe that is the appropriate term. If it is not, I apologize. But I am so excited that I won't actually have to form thoughts on that match. So that is my focus. I have not watched CMLL in a month. I am woefully behind. I will catch up after Anniversario and then do a big binge up through that show. But yes, no, Gate of Miane is the thing that has my attention right now.
I mean, how can it not be when you have not only that match, but you have the Ultimo Dragon Army going up against a mixed army that includes Takashi? You know, I mean, just all the big moments are going to be happening. I would argue that's the biggest show of the wrestling month happening in September is coming up next Wednesday.
Feels like Ben got the short end of the stick on this show. Ben should be in a bigger match than the Ultimo Army match, but as I look through the card, I don't know where I'd put him, because the Yoshioka Mao thing is definitely a thing. Skywalker's in the main event with a mystery partner. Ben doesn't really fit there. Hamare's got his partner figured out. You're doing the Rita and Minoru reunion match. There's not really a spot for Ben, but I feel like Ben should be in a better match than the one that he's in.
Yeah, you know, it seems like that he should be able to like be wedged into the opener for some reason.
Yeah,
make it a 2-on-2-on-1.
I think Ben would love that.
I mean, I'm just presenting opportunities here, okay, so, as we look ahead to that. But we have kind of an interesting week for Open the Voice Gate. We'll talk lead off about the release of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Hall of Fame ballots, and having more Dragon System appearances on there from Saki Mochizuki. Then we'll get into the Gate of Origin from Sendai from Sunday. And we'll talk more about Miane and the return to Osaka in a bit. But Case, I think first and foremost, your biggest fear has happened. Masaki Mochizuki is now officially back on, or he's on the Wrestling Observer newsletter ballot.
Well, let's not bury the lead here, Mike Spears. Somebody got a Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame ballot for the first time this year.
Yeah, I just decided that I just needed to stop doing bits. Like 2025, like I'm almost 40 here. And instead, I was just like, listen, Dave, here's my credentials. That was the weird part, was having to be like, all right, here is my wrestling resume. But yeah, no, got about this Sunday. And
feels good, doesn't it?
You know, I think in the past, I like built it up as something when it really is not a thing. As
funny, I had the opposite reaction the first time I got mine. I go, I am somebody now.
but like, I don't know. I've always been someone that's at least like wrestling and like writing and content wise, however you want to kind of like call like coverage. I do it because I was talking to Patrick Cosmo today, and he was brought up like, oh, people now just get insane about kind of one thing, and that's what they focus on because of everything. And I was like, yeah, no, I would probably be doing like Dragon Gate to like spreadsheets in my spare time. You know, I do these things because I like it. So it's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
To get,
oh, my God. Yeah.
But like, I like look at this list and I'm like, all right, I need to also find ways to, create and like have opinions about someone like I'm going to be like one of the more conservative like people in this. Like, I looked at the ballot, and what really bothered me is I don't want to vote in U.S. historical whatsoever, but I feel like the non-wrestlers, there's so many like that really should be in there that it like it counts as like not voting for anyone in the historical category if you just do non-wrestlers. And that kind of like I'm trying to like figure out that calculus right now, and the U.S. section, to be honest. Like, I think Mexico and Japan, I have it pretty figured out. Like, where's your mind at about like where you're voting, at least as of like today?
I'm going to vote in Mexico for the first time this year, and I have a lot of legwork to do. But with Hamada back on the ballot and with Hamada's death bump looming. I know Dave feels confident he'll get in. I do not feel confident at all that Hamada will get in, but as dumb as this may sound, I want to do my part to make sure that he's in this Hall of Fame. I think he should have been in 20 years ago, but I would like to right that wrong and get him in this year. So I'm going to vote Mexico for the first time. Obviously, I'll be voting Japan, modern U.S. I vote historical, but I have it's funny you say that because I have a very similar thought process to you, which is it's I have to do a lot of legwork on the wrestler portion of it because I find the non-wrestler section for historical to be so interesting. And right, there are guys there like I with Shima in, and I did think Shima was the strongest candidate on the ballot last year, minus maybe the Young Bucks. I think Morris Siegel has become the strongest candidate other than Hamada that's not in, and he's U.S. historical non-wrestler, and I feel very, very strongly about voting for him. And so if I'm going to vote for him, I got to do the research on the rest of the guys, and so I do that, and I'm happy to do that. So I'm at a point now where I'm voting for everything but Europe, Australia, New Zealand, which, you know, that category is an interesting thing in its own right. It's a category mm-hmm. that I don't ever see myself voting in, but I enjoy any conversation around it. So I hope that people still continue to care about that section. But that's where I'm at. I'm curious to you from your perspective, because we haven't talked about this at all, and I haven't dove into anything yet. I was very proud of myself showing growth as a human where I was out on Saturday and got the email mm-hmm. from Dave, and I didn't stop everything and turn around and go home to do Hall of Fame coverage. I was like, I'm gonna continue being a normal human for a few hours, and then I'll go home and dive into this. And I did just a little bit. But what names, whether you think they're a slam dunk, whether you're on the fence about them, or whether you're just all the way out on them, what names are the most interesting to you this year?
I think that names that I'm all the way in, like I need to do more work on Dory Dixon and Sangre Chicana, because I feel like that I'm going, because like Gran Hamada, and there were others within, like when we've talked about this in the past, like that I've had like stronger opinions in Mexico about going in, but I'm at a point now where like I feel like Gran Hamada is I mean, like almost as a thesis to open the voice gate and like our mindset, he has to be in the Hall of Fame. So I'm trying to do the legwork about other candidates that I've done research on. And I think Dory Dixon is one of the ones that I've really like only over like the last few years have become aware of and like reading into, and especially like he's 84 and still alive in Mexico, which I think is kind of like an interesting kind of facet of the thing that I kind of am coming to, like looking at the ballot, especially with like the U.S. and Canada modern one, it does feel like in some ways looking at the ballot, like not without like names in particular, but it seems like this kind of is like the U.S. referendum year on things like Ring of Honor and AEW, like especially with like Mark and Jay Briscoe and Samoa Joe, who, for me, Mark and Jay Briscoe are such like slam dunk, should be Hall of Famers, just from like not necessarily like going for like the influential or necessarily the business side, but I think that if you want to Ishii rule the tag teams, like Mark and Jay Briscoe doing it for 20 years as a tag team, and the fact that like when you take that across other tag teams, like historically, there aren't really teams that have that level of success for that long of a career, and it kind of really solidified, like I feel like I'm very pro Briscoes and Samoa Joe as like that Ring of Honor kind of like, what is the decision about this Hall of Fame and how are they going to treat at yeah. least maybe up until Tony Khan era of Ring of Honor, because that was overall kind of the thing that I felt like was accomplished last year with Shima, was Shima and really Shingo too, is basically saying like, all right, Dragon Gate is considered a Hall of Fame level kind of promotion for like, you could have the cornerstones and like that go in. But with Ring of Honor right now, your biggest cornerstone guy is outside because of basically where he did his best work was so far and away the number three promotion at a time where there was really a number one, a number two that was being brought along. And then kind of like a far off third promotion. In that case, I know you have such a strong opinion about that Joe ROH title run, that I feel like that title run alone, adding to like his career and how he was able to kind of redefine it within TNA and AEW, kind of putting the WWE stuff a little bit to the side and maybe some of the TNA stuff, I think he really should be someone that when you're looking at like as a Hall of Famer, as Samoa Joe feels like one of the stronger cases to me this year, at least in the US category, where there's a lot of people I look at and I don't know if I'm ever going to become a Punk voter. Like, and Cody, I feel like the time is not yet for that for Cody and Mox. So like I find the Briscoes and Joe two of the two more interesting cases. Which one are you kind of at least at like 2 months out or 6 weeks out of ballots being due? Who are you kind of interested by so far?
Well, you know, Mike, you do a show with somebody long enough, they set you up perfectly without talking about it ahead of time. So I greatly appreciate that. We'll circle back to Japan because I find the Japan section to be dire, and I don't think it's going to get better.
We could do the Masaaki Mochizuki episode like how we did the Cubs episode.
Well, yeah, I want to talk about him in just a minute, but briefly, we'll do a bigger Mochizuki episode at some point.
Right, that's what I was saying, yeah.
But I feel so strongly that this Hall of Fame is borderline silly at this point for not embracing and celebrating the Gabe Sapolsky era of Ring of Honor. And I use Sapolsky as the cutoff there. You know, I'm somebody that I think... Are Steen and Generico on the ballot or did they fall off? I think they both fell off. Interesting. Because I really kicked around voting for both Steen and Generico last year. And I think that if we had more records of either Pro Wrestling Tees t-shirt sales or PWG DVDs or Sinclair era Ring of Honor DVD sales, I think especially with Steen, you could come up with an argument that would damn near sway me to vote for him. But to not have representation from Gabe's era of Ring of Honor in this Hall of Fame, it only gets more ridiculous to me by the year. That is a historically great, critically acclaimed, massively influential 6 years of wrestling. And for some reason, we're hung up on 700 paid in Chicago Ridge and not the fact that it changed wrestling as we know it. You know, it's funny you mentioned Punk because go ahead.
One of the things that I think that Ring of Honor and like the attendance there, like the bigger like issue that you really have is that outside of that 6 year stretch, what indie or like promotion has like month in, month out was drawing in that level consistently throughout it? And where is it going from now? Like their promotions, like I just was talking to someone about like the state of the indies, and it's just like, oh, you look at like what's a great like house for Deadlock by themselves, it's like 500. So like I guess my point is like ignoring like the 700 tickets is like not accepting the reality of which now the wrestling world kind of does, because if Samoa Joe can't get in for that, then what's going to say about anyone who works on the US Indies in 2025?
I really just find it to be completely irrelevant from the conversation, because Gabe himself would say that it's a DVD product. And when I wrote an article on Samoa Joe last year, I reached out to some people that were working in Ring of Honor at the time. And unfortunately, they don't have hard DVD sale numbers, which is something that I really dug for last year. I really wanted to find that information. But everybody that I talked to agreed on roughly 5 to 10 shows being the ones that clearly outsold more than the others. You know, Joe versus Kobashi and the first Supercard of Honor and the second Supercard of Honor, and, you know, the Milestone series shows, Joe versus Punk 2. You know, the Ring of Honor shows that you would think would be the best-selling DVDs of all time were the Ring of Honor shows that were the best-selling DVDs of all time. And I just think it's like boomer brain mentality to not understand the difference between the promoting arm that was Jim Crockett Promotions and the promoting arm that was Kerry Silkin and Ring of Honor and Gabe Sapolsky and Ring of Honor during that time, and to not be able to contextualize that and understand that Ring of Honor was doing something different. You know, this is, it's beyond silly to me.
Yeah, and like when you like contextualize like DVD sales, like I think that everyone is like quick to forget like the 20, like I would say like starting really like in 2010 to like however long 2018 rise and like the climax of like the US indie boom, the DVD sales was like the big sweetener that made it all made sense in the end. Like when you think about like these big massive fly-in shows, like not just your Ring of Honors, but your PWGs, and even I would say your Chikara King of Trios with like 10 or 11 international fly-ins, the way that those shows, like I have a general kind of apprehension about pay-per-view numbers from that era, just in general. Like that's a different aside here, but like King of Trios, like the way that that worked was like, okay, you get the people who are there for the tickets, but then you're immediately selling 4X DVDs, and that's where everything breaks even and makes sense with. So like people who aren't even regarding the DVD sales are kind of like cutting out like the unique era that the 2010s really were for US wrestling and really just wrestling in general, because like that's a part of wrestling that we're never going to go back to. But it was so important for like especially guys like Samoa Joe with these six Ring of Honor DVDs that were like the huge movers, like you were saying.
And if anybody wants to play the hypothetical game of, well, what's the line? Where's the cutoff of celebrating indie wrestling? The cutoff is Ring of Honor. You know, I PWG at one point was like the most important thing in my life, and I don't think Super Dragon should be in the Hall of Fame.
No.
I don't think Quackenbush should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, there's no one making the argument, you know, for as influential as he was as a promoter, you know, nobody would have a serious conversation about Ian Rana being in the Hall of Fame. But Ring of Honor is the cutoff here. You know, that's the line. And I said this earlier today, but if Joe has his Ring of Honor world title run in literally any other promotion at any point in history, he's already in the Hall of Fame. We don't have to discuss it. I did not have a ballot before CM Punk returned to wrestling, but I was a huge advocate of voting for Punk as soon as he got on the ballot. I think it's absurd that he's not in. I thought it was absurd that he wasn't in before his return. I think it's even crazier now. And no one is more out on that corny asshole than I am. You know, somebody who at one point, you know, that was my favorite wrestler on earth. I can't look at the guy without being annoyed. And I think he should have moonwalked into this Hall of Fame years ago. And then you have the Briscoes. And I said this, it was in the Voices of Wrestling Discord in the Hall of Fame channel. When the Briscoes first got on the ballot, I spent a lot of time with them, and I was hemming and hawing. And I don't know, you know, the drawing, you know, is their influence. And as you know, as this is as true as it could be, before I submitted my ballot to Dave, I finally had the thought, it's the fucking Briscoe brothers. They should be in the Hall of Fame. That's the resume. That's the case for them. It's the fucking Briscoe brothers. End of conversation. They're one of the five greatest tag teams of all time. They're the second greatest American tag team behind the Young Bucks. I think the gap between them and the Bucks is larger than, say, the gap between the Briscoes and the Rock and Roll. But they're a Mount Rushmore U.S. tag team, and they're not far off from being one of the Mount Rushmore tag teams in the history of wrestling. What are we doing? And if you're somebody who's voting in the Hall of Fame, or at least interested in the Hall of Fame, and you didn't watch Ring of Honor in real time, or you weren't like me and you didn't buy the Sinclair compilation DVDs, as I have two Briscoe Brothers DVDs sitting behind me right now. I was watching one of them 2 weeks ago because I was thinking about how much I love the Briscoe Brothers. Shoot me a note, man. I'll make you a list. The list is going to be long and it's going to be expansive, but it is just, it is so silly that the Briscoes aren't in.
Yeah,
it pains me that, you know, I'm going to have this conversation again this year, because I really think at this point, with Shima in and with Hamada looming, this is now where we have to go, okay, if we're going to tell the story of pro wrestling in this Hall of Fame, which I think is the goal of this Hall of Fame, is to
completely agree with you.
We have the same outlook on the Hall of Fame, which is nice. It makes doing these shows really fun. But, you know, if we're going to highlight the marquee names throughout history that helped evolve or change or, you know, represent wrestling at its very best, to not have the Ring of Honor representation there is just so, so silly. And I just think we're so far removed from, obviously, you know, I mean, think about this. It's been almost 20 years since Gabe got let go from Ring of Honor, but tonally, we're just so far away from what Gabe's era of Ring of Honor was. I just saw the clip yesterday. I forget who posted it, but it was Morishima's Ring of Honor debut, where he came out, hit the backdrop driver on Pele Primo, and then called out Samoa Joe. And somebody made the comment of like, wow, there is nothing in wrestling that looks like this anymore. And they're right. And I always make the point that nothing in wrestling, and this kills me, I mean, it absolutely pains me to say this, nothing in wrestling sounds like Ring of Honor in the Manhattan Center. That is such a specific sound, and there's nothing that comes close to that energy anywhere in wrestling outside of Arena Mexico, which is its own beast right now. So I just think as we go forward, you know, this is a year where I'm on the fence leaning no for Moxley. I'm on the fence leaning yes for Cody. But my focus for whatever podcast, I guess, on whatever writing I might end up doing is just to finally reward the guys who did the best work of their career in Ring of Honor, because enough time has passed to where it is so painfully clear that Ring of Honor and that era is historically significant. And with all due respect to Quack and to PWG and to IWA Mid-South and to wherever else, it's just so much more historically significant than any of those other promotions.
Yeah, I largely do I actually completely co-sign you with on that. I'm looking through like my spreadsheet that I've set up for myself, Case, and the thing that I find myself when I look at that U.S. modern category, other than going Bill Dundee, why are you here? That fun thing is I don't think that there's like. My thing is like, ooh, I don't want to vote for CM Punk, but I am of the belief that I'm going to be someone that's probably going to usually be a max vote person. And it's hard to get like at doing like the versus kind of math here, like going to pick 5 and 6 without me saying Punk. One big thing before I want us to talk about Japan for a second, as we've been talking, I've been like going through my non-wrestler, and I feel like that's where I'm like really excited the more I look at this, because the person that I really, and I think part of this is being a DFW guy, and I know people like Paul Wedding could talk about this person probably much deeper than I can. The person that I really kind of want to get into and research, because I do think that a lot of what he did in World Class kind of pushed the TV and really kind of pushed it to that next level that really is what we're seeing here, and it is Bill Mercer. And I really think that what all that he has that he did, like, yes, Keith Mitchell was like a part of it, but like Bill Mercer's kind of position in like DFW and as a part of those World Class broadcasts, that whenever I go through like old footage, like the thing that always stands out to me is like World Class was like one of the ones that really had modern pro wrestling 40 years ago in a way. And that's someone that I'm going to find myself spending a lot of time with over the next few weeks before I fill out the remainder of the ballot.
That's not a name that had particularly jumped out to me. So I'm curious to see what you end up coming up with for Mercer, because that's somebody that I would be intrigued to learn more about.
Yeah, he's someone that like outside of pro wrestling has like an outside just reputation in DFW, because he was at University of North Texas. He was an RTF professor. So a lot of people who've gone through Dallas-Fort Worth media have had classes with Bill Mercer. So,
I remember talking about this with you. Because he passed last year, didn't he?
Right. I think we were talking about this.
That's very interesting. That's right.
Right. Yeah. So the thing that I wonder, though, is that just a really special locality-based situation, or is there an actual full-on argument for some of these production people? Like, because, yes, Mercer really was a broadcaster, but you're kind of he was involved in a lot more than that, to my recollection. So, like, I'm looking at my non-wrestler category, and then Rich will be very happy that I'm a very quick Jim Johnson voter. and things like that, and like Reggie Parks and Stanley Weston, honestly, are people that like it's gonna be hard for me not to put them in that non-wrestler category.
I will always be a Morris Siegel voter until he gets in.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a George Scott voter. It's one that I never feel totally confident in. Every year he doesn't get in makes me less and less confident that I should vote for Scott. But what I know about him and his instrumental booking and the rise of Hulkamania, information that I have says that he should be in. Real quick before we talk about Japan, if you had to submit a ballot we're recording this at 6:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you had to submit your ballot at 7 o'clock tonight, are you yes or no on Sabu?
I think I'm yes on Sabu, but no on Hayabusa.
I'm a no on Hayabusa. I'm very happy that I don't have to sit through another year of Hayabusa Shima comparisons that I disagree with. The Sabu thing, I think I'm going to go back and listen to the flagship that was 3 hours on Sabu, and I think that'll convince me that I should vote for him. I just need to do a refresher on just how innovative Sabu was. So that is another guy that I'm really kicking around. Let's talk about Japan really quick. Mm-hmm. You know, it's another year of Tenkoji. I have done the legwork on Fujiwara, and I think it's painfully obvious that he's not a Hall of Fame candidate. And I think it's really unfortunate that some very intelligent people continue to stomp their feet and act the way that they do about Fujiwara. I find that behavior to be embarrassing. I think Inoki and Sakaguchi as a tag team is an interesting case, not one that I'm particularly swayed by, but it's one that I enjoy listening to. I'm going to circle back to Zack Sabre Jr. I'm a no on Miko. I'm a no on Io Sky. Tiger Jeet Singh is such an interesting candidate to me because
it's all business and vibes.
Yeah, it's the opposite of Ishii. And that's not even entirely true, because I think Ishii's drawing record has been unfairly maligned, but
sure.
Tiger Jeet Singh raises the question of how good of a draw can you be by being such a bad wrestler? You know, where's the line on when I'm going to vote for you? And if Tiger Jeet Singh was even just a little bit better of a wrestler, I would vote for him. But he is such a bad wrestler that I do not think he belongs in this Hall of Fame. And I think we have to stop going, oh, well, look at all the houses he drew. That's fine. But he is such a negative in the other two categories that I just can't take it.
Can I give you a elevator pitch devil's advocate argument for Tiger Jeet Singh?
Sure.
That yes, he is probably, I mean, I'm looking on this ballot right here. He's probably like, if we are ranking them all like wrestling wise, him and La Parca Triple A are probably down at the bottom, like according to how you feel about it. But if you want to talk about influencing the industry and telling the story of pro wrestling case, I think that because of when Tiger Jeet Singh came in to Japan and how he was kind of that role led essentially, I'm doing the Gran Hamada Lucha Rest argument about like that style of rampaging heel. It starts really with Jeet Singh. So I think that there can be, if you're someone who's like borderline and you want to look at it favorably, I'm probably still a no one just because he's just that bad. It just does not work for me with this, but I can see the argument and the way that someone can justify a Tiger Jeet Singh vote if it is talking about like how it changes wrestling and that kind of influence, because I think that there can be a case can be made for that him in that case.
I think if there was a wrestler that was as good of a wrestler, it's almost like the Ring of Honor thing, where it's like if there was a wrestler that was as good of a wrestler as Jeet Singh as a draw, but drew no money in the same way that Tiger Jeet Singh had zero good matches, I don't think they'd get in the Hall of Fame. And we can't just hand out flowers for somebody that was objectively a great draw for a certain amount of time, but somebody that I find maybe not to be a net negative on wrestling, but definitely a net neutral. But that's I find his case to be fascinating. I really enjoy listening to people talk about his career, but it's one that for now I'm pretty steadfast on not voting for him. I love Takayama to death. I will not be voting for him. Toyota and Yamada, same thing there. Zack Sabre Jr., I'm very surprised at the amount of people that are at least kicking the tires on Zack so far this year. I love Zack. I've loved Zach since the first time I saw him in 2013. I was so excited when he moved to the U.S. around Bowl of 2014 and went full-time with Evolve and was doing that whole thing. I think his Noah work, which at this point is ancient history, is much better than people remember. His first match with Okada is still one of my 5 to 10 favorite Okada matches of all time. I will not take Zack Sabre Jr. seriously as a candidate, with all that being said. I love the guy. I would call him one of the best wrestlers of the 21st century, at least one of my favorite wrestlers of the 21st century. I don't see him in this light at all. Am I wrong on this?
I think that if I were to describe his case to you and took his name away, you probably would think a little differently. Because you're talking about someone who, at his style of wrestling, has been the unquestioned best at it in the world for about a decade, I would say. Like in that style. And by acclamation, like I know that when Danielson came back, he got the award here, but like, let's not get it twisted. The greatest technical wrestler of this generation was Zack Sabre Jr. When you like look at where he was a star at as a champion, like the Evolve stuff, like I'm glad we have the conversation about Ring of Honor and that we're on the same alignment with that. Evolve is a promotion I have a huge issue with for someone's credentials, mainly in that it is a promotion that I don't believe that pay-per-view sales after the Flow Slam lawsuit and those numbers being leaked. I don't believe the financial like acuity of that promotion from that time, but I do think a credit if you take away the financial considerations there. He had an incredible Evolve title run. So you had one territory, PWG, yet another territory, New Japan. And I do think that the thing that makes it kind of hard is that it was a great vibe. It was a great feeling. Zack Sabre Jr. winning G1 and saying, I'm going to cash in right here in this building in 2 months and because that's where I want to do it. But then the business didn't back up. And that's
it's the iron curtain on his candidacy, because if Zach got New Japan really rolling again, then I would be.
If he had Goto's business, if he just had Goto's business, I think
really intrigued by him then. But he did not have that. And to me, it makes it a total non-starter, because that was the thing that he needed to be in the ballpark for this conversation. And I don't even think he's in the ballpark for this conversation now.
Yeah, no, and I'll say that I am a lot more positive towards him. Like, if we're doing the needle here, I would say that you're firmly leans no or strong no, and I am a soft, like, medium on him right there. Like, I think the issue of this category is after, like, Masaki Mochizuki, it gets kind of tough. Like, I think a lot of these people need to, like, the tag team situation here, I don't agree with Inoki and Sakaguchi being put on as a tag team, and if I don't really agree with that, then Tenkoji is tough for me. And the same thing about Tokyo Cuties, you know?
No, I mean, I wouldn't vote for Tenkoji as singles wrestlers, but I think that's going to be the next step here. I mean, the problem is with Japan is I don't know the next time, because I think Mochizuki will fall off this year. I think he'll get under 10, and then, you know, I push for Kenta every year. I would vote for Kenta in a heartbeat. I think it's straight up stupid that he's not already in, but I don't think Kenta would do very well. I think he would hover around 15-20% every year. After that, I don't know when we're going to get a fresh batch of contemporary Japanese wrestlers. I mean, maybe it comes from that Stardom crew years and years from now, but I don't know. You know, I don't know where we're going to go.
I mean, the person that, like, I think she might be up for it soon. Yeah, Mayu in 3 years.
Okay, that's 3 years from now, but that'll be an interesting conversation to have.
Yeah, no, I think that it because how, like, I mean, if you just look at it from, like, as far back macro sense as you can, this is an industry that basically has been in steep decline if you look at the last quarter century. So
with the caveat being that there was the New Japan business in the 2010s, and we've got all of those guys in.
But that was good for that time, but it still wasn't comparing to 90s business or 80s business. Well,
but
business,
no, but that's not entirely true. I mean, they were the most profitable they had ever been, and that's with the little bit of inflation that was there. You know, the houses might not have been there, but I think it's so important to contextualize attendance by era. I think about this in the music industry all the time, where to me, the most dangerous long-term investment there is right now is these sheds. You know, everybody's got one directly outside of whatever major city they live in. You know, here it's Tinley Park, in Indianapolis it's in Noblesville, you know, by where I grew up. But, you know, these 30,000 seat amphitheaters that have the seated area and that have the lawn in country music
in Dallas, that was called Starplex, and now I think it's like Dos Equis. Yeah.
Okay. No, yeah. So, you know, everybody's got one. Everybody in the U.S. knows what I'm talking about. Country music will keep those places afloat a little bit longer, but it's unrealistic to ask most bands now to draw in that setting because of the way that concert consumption has changed. You don't need to be there to see the concert. In sports, like I live 2 miles from Wrigley Field. I go to one Cubs game a year. I go to one or two White Sox games a year. I watch 130 games on TV because it's easy to watch them on TV. Wrestling's the same thing. You know, there are times where AEW's in Chicago, yeah. and I could be fully invested in the product, and I'm still not going because it's just really easy to watch things now. And I think that has to be true for New Japan too, where some of those houses were utterly ridiculous. Now they might not be the inflated dome numbers that we have of the 90s, but objectively they had their most profitable years in the 2010s during the Bushiroad era. So you have to hand that to them. But also I have, you know, there's no one else on that from that era that I think is worthy of consideration. I bet Goto gets on the ballot next year, and I bet people vote for Goto, and I think that would just be asinine. I think there are, even with that, as weak as Japan is right now, I think there are still people on there that are much better candidates than Goto, but Goto popped the number this year.
You can't give it for 5 months. Yeah,
I know, I think people are going to fight for him because they're going to go, well, he had a pretty good career. You know, I don't think Goto is one of the 150 or even 200 best wrestlers of all time, but Goto did have a pretty good career, and now he's got recent vintage houses in a category where I think people are going to be desperate to throw votes at somebody, and I wish those votes would go to Mochizuki, and I wish Kenta would get on the ballot. I wish Sasuke would get back on the ballot. I think that would be incredibly interesting, but contemporary Japan, I mean, you know, it's not like I'm going to tell Dave to put Yamato on there. And it's, you know, Kiyomiya is still years away. And I would laugh at anybody. I would laugh in the face of anybody that voted for Kiyomiya based on the career we've seen from him. It's going to be the Joshi talent. And even then, we're a long ways away from having those conversations. And sure. I think those conversations, I mean, you know, I'm sure the Joshi community will handle them well and very respectfully. But, you know, it's going to be... Stardom, what it is now, is still not 2010's New Japan. We don't need to unclip the velvet rope and just let 8 or 9 people walk into the Hall of Fame. We should be very selective with who we're letting into this club. And I think for Japan, I think it's going to be a long time before we see another influx of no doubt candidates.
Yeah, two quick things. I do have the one person that I will be by next year having a full case for at least meriting the conversation. Dragon Kid. I still think that he is like but he's going to be one that would be struggling at, like, yeah, I think he will either go like Mochizuki or just hover at 15% for like 7 years. But
I'd vote for him in a heartbeat, but I don't see the voting base. No, I mean, I think Mochizuki is a slam dunk between the legs, eyes closed candidate, and I think he's going to get less than 10%. So, I will more than likely have down Dragon Kid. Every year I ask Dave for Kenta, Gabe Sapolsky, and then normally a third one. It'll probably be Dragon Kid, but I don't think anybody would take him seriously.
Yeah, I mean, that's I just think it's interesting that when the Joshi get on the ballot, at least like starting with Mayu, and we'll go down the line for when they hit the ballot, be like, oh yeah, no, they got into wrestling because of Dragon Kid, and Dragon Kid's not having the conversation. My second thing, you know what Goto being on the ballot kind of feels like to me it feels like who he was Bob Horry. He was a important player on those teams, and he got a whole bunch of rings. But I mean, he was not the person that the teams were built around. He was not. And there were times that Bob Horry turned it on and became Big Shot Bob, but it was just known really for that. And I kind of feel like that Goto's like 5 months as champion and slight positive business boom kind of feels a little bit like that similar kind of case that Bob Horry would have in a Hall of Fame discussion.
I think that's a great comp. He's, you know, he's a sixth man. He was a sixth man during the New Japan boom. I can't take that seriously. I think people are going to rally for Goto, and I think he'll probably get votes if he gets on the ballot. But I find that to be just a complete waste of a vote. So we'll see. I care about the Japan category more than anything else in this Hall of Fame, and I'm very, very curious to see how it looks over the next few years.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Yeah, and at least over the next few weeks, I have a lot of people and research I'm going to be doing before I come anywhere close to submitting this thing. But
I gotta say, it feels awesome to not have to do media for Shima this year. I mean this so sincerely. If you had me on your podcast to talk about Shima, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. It's embarrassing.
As someone who was without a ballot, who was like screaming on the sidelines, I greatly, like everyone who pumped up the campaign. Yeah, no, that was huge. But I totally get you being tired about it.
Like, it is embarrassing to me just how much him getting in the Hall of Fame meant to me, because it was years and years of having the same conversation and slowly people finally getting it. And I don't understand what the jump was last year, but at least there was a jump. It really warmed my heart to see him get in, and I am so happy that I no longer have to do podcasts going, well, you know, Torimon was actually a draw from their very first show, and he sustained it for 20 years. He's the only guy to ever draw in Wrestle 1. I'm so, so happy I don't have to do that anymore. So, one final congratulations to Shima, well deserved, and now we can have a brief Masaki Mochizuki conversation here, because I do want to do a full blown. Yeah. Just like we did with Cubs fan last year with Hamada, which I recommend everybody go back and listen to if you either missed it last year or if you just haven't listened to it in a year. The show we did around this time last year with the Cubs fan on the career of Gran Hamada, we'll do one of those for Mochizuki. But just briefly, because I've had some people reach out and I've gotten back to all the DMs, you know, of people coming to me, and I'm sure you've had the same, of going, okay, explain the Mochizuki thing to me. You know, is he a draw? Is he influential? I understand he's a good wrestler. And much like Ishii, I think there's probably a greater drawing resume than people want to give him credit for, maybe even myself included. But the Mochizuki conversation for me is a pretty brief one. I've ranked the 100 greatest wrestlers of all time twice. Mochizuki has been in the top 10 both times. If I had to do it tomorrow, there's no way that he would be outside of my top 10. I think he's one of the smartest wrestlers to ever live. He's been doing it for 31 years. And I feel very comfortable saying that this is the 25th consecutive year that he has been an objectively great wrestler. And much like Joe in Ring of Honor, much like the Briscoes in Ring of Honor, much like Hamada with the work that he did and all of the second tier promotions throughout his career, if Masaki Mochizuki had this same exact career in New Japan, All Japan, or Noah, he would have been in years ago. And it's the Dragon Gate penalty that is. It was largely righted last year with the induction of Shima, but the Mochizuki thing for me is like, hey, he's just one of the best to ever do it. And I feel so, so strongly about that.
Yeah, and I think that the business thing really is going to be the thing that as soon as people kind of like look into it, and the Dragon Gate math is difficult with like the situation with like attendances, right? Like that is always kind of the one of the big issues with Shima, or at least the Strawmans, where you can't trust Dragon Gate numbers. But I think that if you count historically draws of the promotion, especially looking at longevity and looking at like the person that they can bring in, and then you'll see like a streak of like two or three loops with Masaki Mochizuki on top, or like Mochizuki as champion. The business turnaround that happens during that, I think, is something that people kind of miss, because like how in other promotions, like in All Japan, you could tell that there's a sense that eventually it's going to get it back to Miyahara, right? Like Miyahara is the safe place for the Triple Crown and in All Japan, and it's an eventuality that all things kind of fall back to him with that. Mochizuki had a kind of not necessarily like that strong of an effect, but he often was like, if you like look at times where he becomes champion and where things are before and where things are after, he does end up being a little bit of a spark plug to Dragon Gate business in a way that I don't know necessarily outside of Shima there really was that. So I think business wise, there's that to say. The thing is that he's, as you laid out, as soon as you see Masaki Mochizuki's like 20 greatest matches, and you extend it back to like, okay, what's Masaki Mochizuki's 50 greatest matches, or like 100 greatest matches, to be frank with it, you get like such a rounded experience of someone as a pro wrestler that I think like the thing that really kind of strikes me in the same way that I felt like that Danielson has. You take that 100 match stretch for Mochizuki, and it's going to have as much variety as Danielson has, like in how matches worked, what kinds of matches, and all of that. And I think that the most rewarding thing for a voter who doesn't know who isn't necessarily like into Masaki Mochizuki is going and finding some of those, but like not even necessarily like the Dreamgate matches or things like this, but just the work he does with his son and things like this, and just different eras of him that I think fleshed out a career that I look at other people on the ballot that they don't even come close to sniffing like a quarter of at times.
As always, for this Hall of Fame stuff, I said the same thing with Shima. I'll say the same thing here. Whatever people need, you know, if you need match recommendations, if you need links, if you need, you know, a basic biography of Mochizuki, please hit me up in the Voices of Wrestling Discord or on Twitter, and I'll do what I can to get back to you in a timely fashion, because it, you know, it matters to me. Again, like Mike said, I'm annoyed that he's on just because I think he's going to fall off pretty quickly, and I think that's a giant bummer, but I'll be voting for him, and I think as of right now, I think he's going to be the only guy in the region that gets a vote from me, and that could be a pattern for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's just like, whereas with like America and Canada, you get to a certain point where you go like, well, why isn't this person in there in the first place? That's not the case in that category. But yeah, we will revisit Masaki Mochizuki's Hall of Fame candidacy later on this year as we get closer to when ballots are due in November. But let's get back to Dragon Gate proper, as they had their Northern Japan. It used to be billed as like their big show of the year in Northern Japan, but now has just kind of, it's a name show. It's Gate of Origin. It came off from Sendai Sun Plaza on the 14th on Sunday, in case before we run down the show. Just kind of an interesting kind of vibed Gate of Origin. I just, you know, there was a lot of things that I thought were fun and that I enjoyed with it, but for this kind of show, it just seems that like I constantly need to readjust my expectations a little downwards with Origin each year. How did it come off for you?
Well, the first 2 years, it was in the big part of this building. I mean, 2021 Gate of Origin felt like a really big show. In 2022, my recollection of it was the Dragon Kid, Ninja Mac, Shun Skywalker, Diamante tag, which in a weird way felt like a big match, and then it ended up not being very good. What was the main event on that? That's just going to bug me now that I can't remember what that was. Gate of Origin 2022. I might have done a review for this show. Gate of Origin 2022 was, oh, Shimizu and KZ versus Yoshida and Yamato. Let me tell you, I do not remember that match, Mike. Wow.
No.
Do you remember that?
I'm right now looking at your review on this show, and boy.
What did I give the main event?
You gave it 4.
I gave Shimizu and KZ versus Yoshida and Yamato 4?
Let me read from K Slow, December 23rd, 2022.
I'm sweating right now. Go ahead.
I quote, "I was stunned by how good this was. Takashi Yoshida, who dressed in his vintage CyberCon garb in this match, is a very flawed wrestler. At times, he represented a lazy heel monster the Dragon System has leaned on too much in its history. He's been a stiff, lumbering oaf who's taken away from matches more than he's added to him. Behind the mask, a decade in a career, he had lost the charisma that had made him an entertaining youngster. He was a paint-by-numbers heel who was a constant irritant. Yoshida unmasked, turned face, and was humbled. And as a result, he has developed a unique big baby charisma, has turned one of the biggest men on the roster into a permanent underdog." This was like the second time that this wasn't Masaki Mochizuki, please teach me pro wrestling, but this is the Yoshida turns babyface and then instantly infantilizes around his senior's run that I guess we got in 22.
Okay. I'm glad you read that, because boy, was it out of sight, out of mind. There's this run with Yoshida that was largely tied to Doi more so than Yamato, but this is the one time in history that I was emotionally invested in Yoshida. I thought he crushed during this time period. And then it ended right when Gold Class started, because he wasn't invited to Gold Class, and then he got cycled down after that. But there was this weird 4-month period where I actually thought Yoshida was doing really good work. So thank you for that. I forgot this event actually. I thought 2021 was the first one, but it's not. It goes back to 2018, which was Ben and Yoshino. And then the next year was right after Ultimo came back, and it was Hulk, Kagetora Kai, and Yamato versus Dragon Kid, Sasuke, Shinzaki, and Ultimo in the main event. 2020, I have no memory of. That 2021 show, I have vivid memories of. And then everything from 2023 on has been in the smaller building, and so it's just changed the way that I've thought about this show. On the whole, this was, you know, this was a fun show. This would be a really fun Osaka number 2 show because it has a name, because it had a title match. I would mark it as maybe slightly underwhelming, but it was a fun show with one particular match that I really, really enjoyed. Mike Spears, what was my favorite match on this show?
Ah, oh, geez. The issue is that I'm looking at this on the show for me. I would guess your favorite match was Ryo Tanaka versus Ryo Fuda.
My favorite match on this show was the Paradox Trio of Dragon Kid, Kagetora, Tsumi Yokosuka versus the Natural Vibes Trio of Flamita, KZ, and Strong Machine J. I don't know if this match jumped off the screen for anybody else, but I had to stop myself from going 4 stars on this. I thought this match was so unbelievably good, and it was an 8-minute opener. I'll forget about it next week, I'm sure, but oh my god, if you skipped the opener for Gate of Origin, go back and watch it. It was, to me, such a high level display of pro wrestling. Everything that makes this roster so special, because they are so special, couldn't believe how good it was. Put me in a good mood for the rest of the show.
I thought it was fun enough. I thought that Dragon
That's
Kid...
That's kind of what I thought you would say.
I thought that Dragon Kid was extraordinary in this. Like, this is a match where I would give like the lion's share of the stars to Dragon Kid and KZ, especially for like the closing stretch, like the way that they were working around the uppercuts, and then DK countering the B-boy into the Bible kind of out of nowhere abruptly after... I can't remember Kagetora actually being tagged into this match. Like, okay, it felt like it was all Dragon Kid.
Okay. Kagetora tagged into this match because he hit Strong Machine J with his jumping enziguri that he does, that sort of forward charge enziguri, and it's the best looking one he's ever done. It looked like he mauled Strong Machine J.
So then she wipes his hand, say, "My job here was done," and let Dragon Kid do the rest of the work.
That is the only note I have for Kage in this match, but I have in all capital letters, Mike Spears, "Kage killed SMJ with the running enziguri." That is in my notes in all caps. It happened, and this match, for whatever reason, just spoke to me on a level where I thought it was so much better than it had any right to be.
Now, you know, I kept on having moments on the show where I was hoping to get an undercard match to kind of pull me like that. And it just, until after intermission, everything was like, if I read my star ratings off to you, and as you said, like this weekend's Osaka number two, I'd be like, hell yeah, that sounds like just a really kind of fun Osaka number two. The opener was, I thought it was fun enough. I only ended up going 3 flat though.
That's about what I expected you to say.
what were your thoughts on Mochizuki Dojo versus Monte, Ryu, and Kimura? But it felt a lot like that we had Akihiro Sahara winning with a electric chair face buster, kind of just running through it, getting the win here. And I looked down to write down a note saying, man, I really like Kazuma Kimura. He is yet to have a really uninteresting performance. And then Aki just comes in and just tears through everything in this one.
Well, I think what we're learning here is that maybe we shouldn't be basing units around how many pinfall losses guys can take, because it's really exciting when Sahara does something worthwhile, which here would be getting a pinfall victory. It was exciting to a point to see Fuda get the mini push that he got here, and I have some thoughts on Fuda, of course, coming up later. And I'm still waiting on Daiki Yanagiuchi to win, because I think when Yanagiuchi wins, it's going to be really, really exciting. So whether Mochizuki Dojo continues, say, into the new year or not, I don't know, but it's great when they win matches. You know, I have some thoughts on Kimura that I'll share separately here in just a second, but all of these guys are good enough for undercard pushes. You know, I'm not advocating that Sahara become Dreamgate champion tomorrow. I don't need Daiki going crazy. Fuda, I think this is, we saw him at his peak here. But I don't believe in this concept of just, with these three guys specifically, beating them over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, especially like when we're at this point now where you do have Kimura here. Like, there is a natural inclination that as soon as the next class starts debuting, that's when the rookies should start picking up falls like that. And at least as it is for Sahara, I felt like that this felt like the right time for that kind of thing, like especially considering how Daiki had his Brave Gate shot. He was able to fend off the disbandment of the unit. That kind of was like his little victory, and then it's been just not anything with it since then. It's nice to at least see Sahara get that step forward. And I don't know like what it is about him that like just he has explosiveness that I feel like in this promotion is going to really aid when he's able to kind of move into that role, like being able to see just in theory Sahara with Rita as a tag team, or Sahara working with Rita as like in a unit. Like I'm with you. I'm ready for that step. And I don't know if it's next year or we have to wait for the remainder of the class to debut before they get moved. But it was nice to at least see it here in Sendai for Sahara.
Kimura, another super fun performance from him. I specifically liked, you know, after taking just a ton of strikes from Mochizuki, all of which were disgusting, he comes back, he hits a shoulder tackle on Mochizuki, judo throw to Daiki, judo throw to Sahara, and then Mochizuki blocks a judo throw that would have gone in his direction. That set up Sahara for the win. So as we continue to see Kimura make tape more and more, he continues to have sequences in all of his matches that really jump out to me. So I enjoyed that greatly.
Yeah. After that, we had the special singles match, Shun Skywalker versus Kota Minora. Shun ending up winning with a Skyda special pinfall. Second week of Gaja Dokoro, the one thing that's going to annoy me about it is the snake rattle overlay on everyone's names.
Oh, that is fair. I hadn't thought about that, but I could see that. See that being annoying.
Just getting like overtly mixed in, and like not even like getting mixed in, but just being overlaid on Kota Minora's entrance was very distracting for me this morning.
I found this match to be bizarre only in the sense that it's match three, Skywalker and Minora. I figured this was going to end with a DQ and a run and then Skywalker getting beat down because Himari was not at this show. He was preparing to do Miyane's TV show the next day where they announced that Yuma Anzai was going to be his partner at Korakuen. So he was not in town for this. But instead, it was just a 10-minute Skywalker-Minoru match three on a semi-big show. And the entire time I was watching it, I was just going, well, you know, okay, here comes the ref bump, here comes the DQ, you know, here comes something. And it was just a match. And it was a clean finish, and it really caught me off guard.
It was kind of slow, too. Like,
well, it was. That's why, because they didn't work it. Like, they were almost they were put in a position to fail, because this is the type of thing that I think kind of has to be a post-intermission match. I mean, think about this. I was thinking about this when I was watching it, where, you know, Mike, at this time last year, my big fear was that the match we just saw was going to be the lead program in the summer of 2025. Mm-hmm. And instead it was match three on Gate of Origin, and it wasn't a big deal whatsoever, which is a credit to Kakuta for doing the work that he's done. I don't know if it is a reflection on Minoru necessarily. Again, I kind of just give credit to Kakuta being so good that he properly slotted Minoru, but I was afraid this match was going to headline Kobe World this year. And it was this 10-minute kind of slow match.
Yeah, and I have to say, I don't think that Shun should be using the Skyda special as a pen. The finish was, it kind of felt like that they were like, all right, we're working through this match. And, well, okay, you go over here for this, then I roll through and I need a seatbelt your leg. There we go, we're out of here. And it just felt very kind of odd, because you're absolutely right. Like, this was like kind of our greatest fear. And instead we kind of got to see what the fear is in a position that normally would be Kazuma Kimura versus Kai.
Yeah. And again, I don't necessarily think that's a referendum on Minoru. I really like the work that Skywalker's doing, but they did give us a house show effort for at one point what was going to be a pretty big match.
Yeah, Shun Skywalker has Bugs Bunny tendencies, and I think this might play a little bit into, I don't think we need Shun therapy this week, but I think this is kind of getting into Shun might be getting a little over his head with his stuff, because there's
I found this to just be one of those nights, you know. I wasn't freaked out by anything that I saw here. I just think this was the result of this show making tape and us seeing the wrong show to make tape.
Yeah, right. But you know what I mean? Like, Shun, there was like a moment where like he jumps and stands on the middle ropes and starts laughing. I was like, oh, this is like right out of a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
I like that spot, actually. That was on the scale of Shun madness. I thought that one was pretty strong. But yeah, just a match. And thank God, I would much rather have it be just a match at Gate of Origin than just a match at Kobe World.
What was not just the match was a battle of Twin Gate eras, as the current Open the Twin Gate champions, Yuki Yoshioka, Dragon Daya of D Courage, going up against multiple time former Open the Twin Gate champions, Yamato and BB Hulk, in a very interesting match. A whole lot of Yamato kind of treating Daya like he was still Dreamgate champion and putting him down and getting a glimpse of what him versus Yoshioka could have been. I really kind of enjoyed this, especially for Yamato kind of bringing that edge into this kind of tag match here.
I thought this was good. You know, I'm with you there. I thought the Daya Yamato stuff was in particular the strongest stuff in
Daya's
this match.
Chest was gross by the end of it.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what we talked about a few weeks ago, where he's found a way to elevate the floor of his matches. It's just a little bit better than it was a few years ago. And I thought Dai and Yamato brought a lot out of each other here. So I enjoyed this.
Yeah, this was a match that when people are asking me like recommendations, it's going to be on like my recommendation list, just because it was just such a fun time of a match. And I really like, I did not think 2 years ago I'd be so much of a fan of Yamato in 2025. Like, it's just, it's real enthralling stuff, especially whenever he's in there with Daya.
Yeah, I guess this just, I don't know why this just popped in my head, and we don't have to have a full-blown conversation about this, but Yamato, is Yamato one of the 10 best wrestlers in 2025? Is he one of the 15 best wrestlers in 2025? As we sit here mid-September, kind of where's your head at with him?
I mean, people who I have higher than Yamato, Will Ospreay, Mystico, Gabe Kidd had it, but
Yamato's been better than Gabe this year. Come on, Gabe doesn't even have the G1 stuff to fall back on.
No, you're absolutely right about that. I think Yamato's one of the 10 best wrestlers in the world in 2025, honestly, and that's not just me saying it on Dragon Gate show. Like, it's hard for me to think of the many other wrestlers who I think have had as complete of a year so far.
Yeah, I'm with you. Just the way you describe this match, because again, it didn't jump out to me the same way it did to you, but I'm now thinking, I go, well, you know, he's had a lot of these this year where he's just very, very good in it. And so I wanted to, because he's been out of sight, out of mind as not the Dreamgate champion, I just wanted to throw that out there real quick.
You know what I think it really is that he has now, he's in a role now that he's much more comfortable, or he feels a lot more comfortable in as a viewer than he was in 2017, like he's essentially the same person in the equilibrium and in the system, like, but he's no longer having to be out front company ace. He's now kind of like the older veteran ace that's like everyone still identifies the company with him at this point, especially after that title run. But he's now like, he's on the other side of 40. He's had these young kids that are kind of shouldering the weight a little bit. And I think it's just a little bit more comfortable. And I think it kind of is shown in his output, at least over the last 18 months.
I would agree with that.
This is my main event of Gate of Origin was Sendai native Rhea Fuda finally getting his Brave Gate shot in the building he debuted in against the Open the Brave Gate champion Ryoya Tanaka. As it has gone throughout Ryoya Tanaka's Brave Gate run, Ryoya Tanaka won with a Joker Strizer Stardust pressed. I was so close to going 4 on this match. I think it was like my favorite match on the show, but it just felt like it was just that one kind of shade over it. But I think Rhea Fuda as a singles wrestler, this felt like one of his most complete performances. It just was not able to get over, at least for me, that plateau.
So I liked this match. I thought Tanaka was stellar. And I sort of just thought Fuda was there. And it ultimately is the match that I thought it was going to be, which is I was a little bit more excited for it going into it than I thought I was going to be because of the Cork and Angle, just the simplicity of Fuda hitting the middle kick on Tanaka, cutting the short promo, setting up the match for here. I thought the atmosphere was about as good as you could ask for a hometown crowd with Rhea Fuda specifically. And it demonstrated to me that this is who Fuda is. 4 years ago at this event, when he made his debut, I thought we were looking at, the second coming of somebody. He has one of my favorite debut matches in the history of wrestling. And as time has gone on, my biggest complaint with him has been, I don't think he's been able to show any form of greatness when he isn't in the ring with a Mochizuki, whether it be senior or junior. And I kind of thought, maybe exposed is the wrong word. Maybe that's too harsh, but Rhea Fuda is who we thought he was. He is an average wrestler at best on a roster that routinely does above average things. And I thought Tanaka worked circles around him. I thought Tanaka made this match interesting. And the fear going forward is, I just don't know if you're Rhea Fuda, I don't know how your career gets bigger or better than this match.
Yeah, and I at least for me, it kind of felt like the story of the match was Tanaka just implicitly ignoring Fuda's karate approach and trying to basically go like, yeah, no, this is what you're doing. I need to see you to do more. And then the near falls at the end. And then especially with like the middle kick and the hear you and Fuda's inability to get the pin off after the hear you kind of like slotted him exactly as you're saying, where he was here. I just like the idea that Ryoya Tanaka as Brave Gate champion is so he is such a, like a natural heel babyface that like as it was getting close towards the end, and I think that was like one of the better looking Crimson Smash and Cross Sabers that he's hit.
He was outstanding in this match.
Yeah, he had like a level of cocky confidence that if it happened in a US indie, he would immediately be jeered at and everyone would want to kill him. Like he just has that naturally in him, and he was like kind of using it on display that I ended up going 3¾ on it. Like I was, if Fuda brought anything more to it, this match, it would have easily been like a 4-star match. And I'd be like, yeah, this was the Rhea Fuda match. We told the story here. Now, Fuda, good luck. Hope you get a heel turn so you could actually be doing something a little bit of consequence, because I don't see where else he can go, because I mean, he's pretty hard stuck where he is.
See, that's my fear, is that they're going to turn Fuda heel. And I think it would mirror when they turned Punch heel and he became Punch 11 years ago, where I think he would get like a blitz of a push. I think they would do something crazy with him immediately, and then it would slowly fade away, and he would just go back to being a lost post in a heel unit, where I would rather see Daiki turn on him, or have somebody turn on him and
Dark
have him be the
energy Daiki finally coming
in. Just something. I would rather him stay a babyface and have a heel to work off of, you know, whether it be a program with Kato, or I have some thoughts on the main event on him, or just whatever it may be. But I think turning him heel, maybe this is just the jaded now longtime Dragon Gate fan of me, where if they turn Fuda heel, say at the October Corkin, I'm immediately going to be skeptical, and I'm immediately going to go, I know where this is going. Nobody get too excited.
Yeah, the only thing that means is that eventually he'll get a Brave Gate run when the belt's at its worst.
I don't know if he even would do that. I think he would get a big singles win over somebody, but I'm not sure. I don't know if he'll ever hold a title. And if he does, I think he's going to be the third leg in a Triangle Gate team. I'm glad this match happened, because it's been a weird 2-year wait to get to this point. You know, it's supposed to be him and Ishin in 2023, and then he got hurt. But I just don't see it getting better than this. And this wasn't great. And I would be just very perplexed on what to do with Rhea Fuda if I had the pencil going forward. Because I think Daiki would have done better in this spot. I think Sahara would have done better in this spot. Obviously, it wouldn't be a Brave Gate match, but I think Kimura at least would have been more interesting in this spot. And Himare is Himare. So of the quote-unquote young guys on the roster, we're now once again at a point where Fuda is at the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, no, and I don't know necessarily how you change that future. The main event of Gate of Sendai, I have not realized this until I was actually looking at your review of 2022. They like doing Captain's Falls and Sendai, because the semi-main event of that show was Gold Class, D Courage, and that would have been Z-Brats at that time. But this time, it's Love and Peace versus Gaja Dokuro. Your captains were Ben and Madoka Kakuta. I'm going to run through the eliminations real quick, Kiss. The eliminations were, as I go down the list here with this, Kamei got Jason Lee with a jackknife, and then Jason Lee grabbed Mochizuki Jr.'s leg, and that basically allowed Kato to send him over the top rope. Kai and Kato then launch Rita over the top rope. Really kind of impressive there. Ben catches Kai with the spear. Ishin goes over Kamei. Benkei then later also sends Kai over the top rope. The last elimination before the finish was Hyo doing the Samson driver on Ishin, leaving it 2-on-1 for Love and Peace. But it was Kakuta getting the captain's fall on Benkei, isolating him out, and numbers game, having Hyo drag that ringside aloud. Kakuta to get the clean win in 24 minutes and 40 seconds. And let's just talk about him. I thought Kato was really good in this match, and I thought that he ended up like really incorporating himself deep into the match as it went along.
I'm going to take a victory lap here, Mike. I told everybody, don't worry about Yoshiki Kato. He's going to be fine. There wasn't a spot to push him earlier this year when you had a unit with Shun and Himare and at times Valletta. There just wasn't a place for him to go. And I know that he fell to the bottom of the power rankings of the heel unit, and people were rightfully asking questions about what his future might be. I never worried about Kato. I always knew that he would get a chance to shine, and I knew that when he got that chance that he would indeed shine. And I thought Kato was the MVP of this match. I thought he was excellent here.
Just like from like he probably has done my favorite version of a Polish hammer in this match. Like just the way he was just an absolute like steamroller that whenever he was in the match, I think the thing that kind of makes the Captain's Fall match, at least in Dragon Gate, work so well with it is that it allows you to kind of have a focus on like what the finish is going to have to be. But then you're able to kind of it allows you to kind of just have like a full in like Dragon Gate sprint flow throughout most of the match. I thought the brawl that they did, saving the crowd brawl for this match, and then after that, like using that as a tool, because they start the match by completely isolating Ben and going, all right, we're getting this thing over with immediately. We clear the room of all the small guys. We're taking out Ben. And then when that doesn't work, Gotcha Dokuro taking them to the outside. I thought that was just a really smart bit of like match planning that I feel like that Captain's Fall matches present that you don't necessarily get to see in other kinds of elimination style matches. But yeah, I thought that Kato really kind of stood out in the way that they did the finish for Ben, where he eats like four straight hip attacks and then it takes the discus lariat to take him out. I thought that that was a strong and kind of intriguing kind of little, I guess we're kind of almost at like the quarter post for the lead up to the match in October with the show coming up this weekend in Osaka. But I like where they kind of left us on in this title build a whole lot.
I thought the hip attack counter to the spear was one of the more exciting spots of the Dragon Gate calendar year. I did not see that coming. It made me jump out of my chair. I really enjoyed that. The other thing that I thought was great in this match was Kame and Ishin were in the ring with one another, and Kame went for the Torbellino. Ishin stayed on his feet, countered, shoved Kame in the direction of Yagi, and while all of that was happening, Jason Lee slid a cookie sheet into the ring. Kame turns around right as Ishin picks up the sheet. Ishin drills him. Referee then turns around. 1, 2, 3. I thought the timing of that spot was next level. I thought they crushed that. Job well done by everybody involved. Back to the main event, the Kakuta Ben stuff. Yeah, I'm into the match. I think it's interesting that they beat Ben here because it raises the likelihood of Ben winning, I think, from 1% to 2%. And I've got to keep my eyebrows raised at that.
Yeah, and at least like looking at the show coming up this weekend in Osaka, it does feel like you're going straight into like this to Ben and Hyo versus Kakuta and Minoura as the semi-main event of that show. And it makes you think like, okay, is Ben ever going to kind of be able to get him one-on-one before the match? And it does kind of, in a way, add a little bit of heat to a thing where I don't think that either of us really have any expectations of Ben winning this match, but it's just like a nice, interesting turn along the way before we get to the finish that we're expecting.
I agree with that.
Any other thoughts of Gate of Origin before I run down the rest of the Stormgate show?
Easy to watch, fun show. I love that opener. Maybe I'm the only one on Earth that did, and I would watch the final two matches for the story of Rio Fuda and the story of the main event, because I think that Ben versus Kakuta Dreamgate match will end up being a pretty hot match by the time it hits the ring in Tokyo.
No, I'm with you on that. And we're going back to Osaka for the first time in 5 months. It feels like this will be their they're in Osaka number two. This is kind of as planned. Two is going to be open for a little bit. They're going to have that doubleheader in November, but then it's going to go away again. But this will be their return there, at least just off the top of my head. I don't remember them showing up here since. I'll just look through my notes real quick. The last Osaka show that I have in my notes was in March, so almost 6 months. But the show that we have coming up on Sunday, we're opening with Akihiro Sahara versus Susumu Yokosuka, Masaki Mochizuki and Rio Fuda versus KZ and UT, Ultimo Dragon, Strong Machine J, Flamita and Luis Monte versus Don Fuji, Takashi, Sachi Hoko Boy and Hoho Loon. Special singles match, Hamare versus Jason Lee. Match 5, Paradox, Yamato, Dragon Kid and Haruki Doi versus Love and Peace, Jackie Kamei, Rita and Mochizuki Jr., the aforementioned Ben and Hyo versus Kakuta and Minoura semi-main event, And then your main event, a special six-man tag match, all champions. D Courage, consisting of the Brave Gate champion, Ryo Tanaka, and the Open the Twin Gate champions, Dragon Dai and Yuki Yoshioka, go up against the Open the Triangle Gate champions from Gaja Dokoro, Kai Ishin, and Yoshiki Kato. I feel like that even outside of match three being what it is, there's interesting parts of basically everything on this show. I think it's a real, it'll be interesting to see where the company stands in Osaka after 5 months.
I think this is a super fun show. I think the Yamato Dragon Kid Doi versus Kame Rita Jr. match, if they work it at 100%, I think is a super interesting match. And I'd really like to see Kame and Doi in particular mix it up. I think Susumu versus Sahara is a fascinating match. I think Homare versus Jason is a fascinating match. And I think that main event has the potential to be pretty special. You know, we still, because Tanaka has been Brave Gate champion now, based on when Yoshioka returned, I don't feel like we've had an influx of Tanaka, Daya, Yoshioka big time trios matches. That still feels like a novel concept to me. So to have that in the main event in Osaka is quite exciting.
Yeah, and it's Tanaka's home building, so that's a nice little nod to that there. It's a fun-looking show coming up on Sunday. The other show that will be on the network this next week is the Gate of Miyane. We talked about it briefly. I'm just going to run through the card real quick. It's going to be on the 24th on Wednesday. Voice Gate will be with me solo next week. I think I'm going to... Did you want me to hold off and do the Miyane review until you're back, or should
no,
I?
No, if you want to record audio on it, I'll give brief thoughts the week after. But take the bulk of it, please.
Oh yeah, but well, I will be taking the written review, so I will be taking the bulk of it. The Flamita and Jackie Kamei versus Luis Monte and Ryo Tanaka, the Ultimo Army of Ultimo Dragon, Washidamo Dragon, Susutamo Dragon, and it's listed on Puroso Spirit as another Ultimo Dragon, but I know it's like Super Dragon J or something. It's supposed to be like old, it's supposed to be Strong Machine J versus KZ, Benkei, Kagetora Takashi. The match that Case is most looking forward to, Kai, BB Hulk, and Hyo versus Danshoku Dino from DDT, Masaki Oka, and Fujiko Fuji. That's going to be Masaki Mochizuki and Don Fuji with Don Fuji, or with Danshoku Dino. Kota Minora and Rita reunite their tag team versus Jason Lee and Mochizuki Jr. Yuma Anzai, as we mentioned earlier, was revealed as X, teaming with Hamare versus Madoka Kakuta and Yoshiki Kato. Yuki Yoshioka and his lookalike Mao from DDT versus Dragon Kid and Dragon Daya. And we still don't know Shun Skywalker's X, but he'll be teaming with X versus Minoru Suzuki and Yamato. It's a wild card.
It is. It's a fun show. I hope the final attendance number is good, because I think that's a show that deserves a pretty big audience. And I'm looking forward to watching it. I think that opening match in particular could be really special.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yuma Anzai and Hamare, that I did definitely deliver it as the X there. And then, yeah, Skywalker's exit. Do you have any idea or any sort of guess you want to make for it at this point?
No clue. I have no feel for that whatsoever. I guess Bushi's the popular guess.
Yeah, Bushi seems to be kind of like the clubhouse favorite with it. There's a part of me that doesn't think, maybe it's Kenta. Like, is Kenta exclusively signed with Noah right now?
I don't know, but I don't think that would prevent him from working this show.
I'm just like, that seems like someone that they could do for that. I know, just vibes. Kenta, why not Kenta?
Them have a conversation at the WrestleMania weekend show that we were at. I asked you this, like, with the company with Izzy. What was that place?
It was Texas Wrestling Cartel.
Yeah, I watched Kenta and Shun Skywalker have a conversation in the parking lot of that show. So they are aware of each other, because I saw that with my own eyes.
Hey, that brought to you here first. If that happens, then we know where the tag team was formed. You
That's
know?
Right. I should have taken a photo, but Shun was not wearing a mask, and that would have been impolite.
Let's not unmask Shun Skywalker.
I'm not shoot trash. I don't want to unmask Silverant. I don't want to unmask Shun Skywalker.
Yeah. did see that Hot Sauce was booked at the AEW residency, which was like the first time I saw that name. It feels like since Sinclair or Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I did not see that. So I have yet to come across Hot Sauce Tracy Williams in my feed in 2025. I must admit that was not on my radar.
It wasn't on mine either. Anything you want to hit on before we're out of here, buddy?
I do not. I will talk to everybody in 2 weeks. October's right around the corner. The return of those days. Looking forward to it. And Mike will hold down the fort next week with some excellent audio that I am excited to listen to.
Yeah, that's right. Case will be gone next week. And that means that's right. We're getting some great coverage coming in here next week on Open the Voice Gate. And yeah, Case will be back in a few weeks, and look to October for those days. I went through everything for it last week, Case, and I am really excited to get into it when we come back to it.
Good.
But that will be our schedule coming up. You could follow us on social media, both Twitter and Blue Sky at Open Voice Gate. You could follow Case at underscore in your case. You could follow me at Fuchi Heya. If you would like to join in the conversation, the Voices of Wrestling Discord is one of the best places to do it, especially the Dragon Gate channel. A lot of discussion, especially with someone I can't believe we went an hour and 25 minutes, Case, without saying, Taku Iwasa was at the show here. A lot of Iwasa talk in the channel over the last few days, and that's at least made me pretty happy. But also, there's Open the Voice Gate channel that has our show listings. There's a pinned post with all of our historical work as well as whenever there's those days, we post about it there, including the match listing. So check that out at the Voices of Wrestling Discord. But I will be back with y'all next week. We'll hear from Case in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening to Open Voice Gate. We'll catch you next time. Take care.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hello everyone, my name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Every other Monday, we're coming at you with news, show reviews, and previews of upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're just getting into the scene or you've seen it all, this is the show for you.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network and wherever you get your audio.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.